freaking sweet story. We have one more storyteller tonight. This gentleman is a senior reporter at Kotaku. He is a co-host of the Match 3 video game podcast. Also a really, really great dude, Mr. Patrick Klepek.
Hey. Well, no pressure with all these stories. But thanks for sticking around for mine. When I started thinking through the topic, I was thinking, okay, scariest moments of my life, things that are horrifying. It's like, okay, these stories are really short. The first came to mind, it's like, is the time in college when I woke up with two mangled fingers and the last thing I remembered was drinking at a brick? Don't know what happened. Two broken fingers, everything was fine. It was at the time when it was my wife's birthday and she had a lot to drink. I was the one that was going to be safe and responsible. She had a lot of shots with her friends. And she kept throwing up in bed, but kept wanting me to stay with her in bed while it was happening. I managed to avoid. And I started thinking about, like, horror films. The thing that my wife and I fell in love with each other over. It's the kind of thing we're kind of obsessed with. And so I started thinking about the films when I was younger that really scared me. And the movies that scared me when I was younger were The Blair Witch Project really got under my skin. I was just young enough, and things like Viral and, like, We're Pretending It's Real But It's Not, like, weren't, like, stereotypes at that point. So I was well convinced that somehow they had allowed them to put in police footage in a movie theater, charge you $8, and then the kids die at the end. So it was terrifying to me. I eventually pieced it together and didn't admit to anyone that I had been half convinced in the theater we were watching real footage. The other time was when my parents thought that showing us the entire quadrilogy of Jaws when we were on a lake trip, and my brother and I were 8 and 6, and like, we're going on a boat tomorrow, and it's, I don't want to go on that fucking boat, because if I can't see what's beneath me, like, there might be a shark. They're like, it's a lake. It's like, if you can't 100% prove to me there's no shark down there. There might be a shark down there. And this traumatized me for years, to the point where when I would be in the deep end of the pool, you'd be sitting there going, like, I mean, I know that vent is tiny, but sharks are smart. Like, they might be able to make it through there. And so stuff like that, and I was like, okay, well, I mean, those were kind of scary moments. But I just remember the time I was most horrified. And the time I was most horrified was when I was 16. And when I was 16, I'd just gotten my driver's license. And when you get your driver's license, like, when you first start out, like, depending on what state, and when I was 16 here in Illinois, like, there are all these restrictions, right? Like, oh, okay, well, for a certain time, you can't be with people, you can't drive with friends, or it's got to be an adult, or you have to be home by curfew at midnight. And my dad was a very kind, nice soul, but he had his rules. And if you went past those rules, that all went out the window, and he screamed at you, and it was very uncomfortable. And this was something that we just kind of knew growing up. It was like, Dad's great. Just follow the rules and everything's cool. And he had this temper about him that was like, you know, it wasn't like a mean thing. It was just like he had his things. And like one of the things we noticed was that my brother and I would listen to him when he was on his sales calls. Now, he was the VP of sales at Riddell, which was like, if you watch like football or anything like that, like the red logo was on the helmets. So he was pretty high up there. And he was a guy that was like, he didn't swear, you know, things like that. And then my brother and I would, you know, put up our ears to the door and we would hear the words coming out of this man's mouth. If those came out of our mouth, like, we'd be grounded for months. And he never liked us to point that out. He would just sort of grumble about it if we pointed out all the swears that that he was saying in private. And so he was a real stickler about this curfew stuff. And so I got this stuff down to a science. It's like I'd gotten this new girlfriend, my first girlfriend at the time, Nikki Asimopoulos. I don't know where she is now. Hopefully she's doing well. I was very proud of myself at the time. And she lived about a mile away. And so I had it down to if I left at 11:54 and I hit the lights just right, I would roll into the house at 11:59, just enough that my parents are very upset at me that I got that close, but not enough that they can be super upset at me because I did make it back before the midnight curfew. And so it was one night that I was out, and it was raining a little bit, and like I had just a really great makeout session. So I was really trying to stretch this like 11:54. It was like 11:54:15, 11:54:30, and then finally I was like, all right, I gotta get on the road. And it was raining a little bit. I was feeling good about myself. And what I didn't realize, when you're 16, you're not really used to driving. You haven't had, like, close calls and things like that. is that when it's raining, you gotta be a little more careful, which seems obvious now that I'm 30, but at 16, it's like, you just hit the accelerator, already hit the gas, you're fine. And I, again, like I said, I had this very specific way of like hitting the lights and the stop signs. And so I've got like Green Day or Weezer or something cranked up, and I hit my first stoplight, and it's coming off this Kirchhoff Road, like I remember it vividly in my mind. And it's raining, and I would always slam that accelerator because I would time the music to a part where, like, I'm just going to jam out as I kind of come around this. And if you do that when it's slightly drizzling, there's this thing called hydroplaning. And hydroplaning occurs when it is slightly raining out, and you slam on the accelerator. So I slam on the accelerator, and immediately the car starts going woo, woo, woo. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I got to stop this car. And the one thing you don't do when you're hydroplaning is slam on the brake. So I slammed on the brake. And the car goes, now we're just really fishtailing. We're, like, really going for it. And it swerves. There's, like, nothing I can do. Ends up slamming against a telephone pole, like, right up along the right-hand side. Like, just tears, like, the right-hand side of the car. Like, rear-view mirror, it's all just bashed up. But so the way the car landed, though, was, like, right over the sidewalk, just over, in, like, halfway through the bushes in, like, this neighbor's yard, and it kind of looked like I'd taken a right and gone and parked in someone's driveway. So no car stopped. Like, they came up right after the accident occurred and were like, well, that guy did a nice job parking his car. And it, like, so no one stops. I'm 16. I evaluate myself. I evaluate the car. I look to the right side of the car and go, well, we're just going to stop looking over on the right-hand side of the car. There's no one with me. I'm by myself. No broken bones. I'm fine. Some shattered windows. The music's no longer playing. First thing I think of is, oh, God, what time is it? It's 12:04. I'm, like, thinking to myself, it's 12:04. I have wrecked this car. And this is pre-cell phone era. So I have no way to call anyone. And no one's stopping. I'm like waving my hand out like, please, I was in a terrible accident. Someone come help me. No one's stopping. And so I'm now thinking, I've never really pissed off my dad before. I am now adding things up here in a real exponential way. I am late. The car is ruined. And I haven't even called to explain why I'm late. So then I have to walk three blocks. Three blocks, I know three blocks down there is a gas station that has a payphone. And so I know. And, like, every step, it's like, all right, that was another 10 seconds. That was another 10 seconds. And we're heading into 12:15, 12:20 territory. I mean, this is bad. Like, even without the car being wrecked, like, we are in horrible territory. And get to the payphone, and I realize I don't have any change on me. Run back to the car. There's no change in the car. So I think to myself, all right, it's now 12:20. The car is wrecked, and I have to call my parents collect. So I call, I dial in the number or whatever is listed on the thing, like, if you got no money here, you can call and they can pay up the ass to pick up the phone call. And in the message where they're like, please leave your name so that people, like, you know, who's calling, I'm like, hey, especially I was in a car accident, please pick up the phone. My mom picks up the phone, she's like, I didn't hear a word you said. And I was like, I may have been in a car accident and it's 12:20, could you please come help me? And I don't want to call the cops. I'm too afraid. Can you call the cops? I don't know what they're going to do. Like, what are the cops going to do? So she very calmly just accepts this as a matter of fact. They come down, and the whole time I'm just, you know, just like waiting, like, oh, my dad is really just, he's going to give it to me. He's really just like, you have fucked up, Kluppik. Like, you have done some things in your life, and this is it. And gets there, and, like, the first thing the cop says is, like, clarifies, like, when did this accident occur? I was like, around midnight. He's like, before midnight or after midnight? I was like, definitely before midnight. And we get through that. Dad doesn't say anything when he shows up. Doesn't say anything on the ride home. Doesn't say anything the next day. I go through a whole week, no conversation with the dad. I think he is doing some Dragon Ball Z Super Saiyan, getting ready to, like, or this is like some Vietnam psychological warfare where, like, I'm just wake up and every day it's like, hey, Dad, and, like, is this it? Is this where the meltdown occurs? Like, I'm ready. Like, I've just worked up my mind over the course of a week. Like, I have never been more terrified. It only built on the fact that I had, it would have been a much sweeter release to be yelled at this point. Like, I just wanted it to be over and, like, to deal with the guilt was so much worse. And I remember, pulling aside my mom at some point, just being like, so, like, when's this going to go down? Like, this is really bad. And she goes, well, let me just tell you something. Actually, as it turns out, your dad flips out over things like you're not putting on your seatbelt, you're not putting on, like, a life vest quick enough, you're not coming home at midnight, but he doesn't actually know how to say that he's not actually pissed and he's just glad that you didn't get hurt. And so his way of expressing that is just by not talking to you at all. And I said, wait, so like, we're cool? And she was like, yeah, you should probably go formally apologize, but your dad already forgave you. He will just never tell you that. And so the time in which I had like been more scared in my entire life, it was actually my dad telling me he loved me. He just had no way to say it. So thank you.
Patrick, what a sweet story to end the night with. By the way, I should have mentioned in his introduction, the second time Patrick told a story on this show, it was about how he has a created by credit on the movie Evil Bong 3, which is obviously one of the greatest horror movies of all time. So that's a really good story.
Did you say that?
Listen, I know that what you intended for the movie isn't what happened. I got your back, man.
Creative conflict.
Exactly, exactly.